Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where
prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hi, I'm Abigail, and I'm addicted to money. So for the next 50 seconds, I'd like to feel dirty, inconsiderate, manipulative, and ashamed. I apparently agreed to play the game of life by the rules made by the rich in order to make them more rich. And because I feel powerless and out of control, I am asking you to listen to this ad for Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. It's free. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your computer or phone. Anchor will distribute your podcast wherever you can get podcasts. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. And everything you need to make a podcast is in one place. So download Anchor for free on the app or go to anchor.fm to get started. So yeah, that's all I have. Thanks for letting me share.
Hello, hello, hello. You're listening to the Manic Pixie Weirdo. I'm Abigail, your host, and this is part 3 of the Our Relationship with Guns episodes with Steven from Reddit. So I hope you enjoy
that.
So what would you like? Okay, so for home defense specifically, what would be like your faves, like your top three or whatever for like home defense?
So home defense is a super, super interesting topic, and there is a lot of data about it because the FBI gathers, you know, crime statistics and defensive gun statistics and things like that. And give me a second. There's a lot of debate in the community between experts and also people that are not experts like myself. I don't claim to be an expert. I am like a hobbyist and enthusiast. And probably no more than like your average Joe non-gun owner. But anyway, there's lots of in the gun community, like people that are enthusiastic about guns and shooting and ownership and collecting and everything. There's lots of ex-military, ex-police, ex-whatever security forces and secret service and things like that. And so there's a lot of people who have these practical scenarios that they've lived through where they could say, hey, you know, if you're in a building that has really thin walls, you really should not use that particular kind of gun because it's just going to like go through and annihilate whatever's on the other side, you know. Or if you're using a shotgun with a 28-inch bird hunting barrel in your home, well, if you need to turn around in the hallway, you're screwed because your hallway plus your body behind it, you're not going to be able to turn, you know. So there's all these different kinds of factors that come into play. Or say, for example, like I have the tiny gun that has the horse coil. The sights, I don't know if you can see, the sights are about an eighth of an inch high versus on like this kind of gun, we have nearly a quarter inch of sights.
That actually looks like almost identical to the one that we have here at the house. So,
It's a similar, you know, it's a common form factor. Because it's a tried and true design, but anyway, so there's all these different things that are objective things. Like you don't want a super long barrel, you don't want something that's so powerful. Like imagine a like some kind of hunting round or something that's designed to go like 1,000 meters. You don't want like a 50 caliber sniper rifle or something that like the world record for those guns is like over a mile long for. There's a Marine guy, I think, who shot somebody from a mile away in the head with one of those, you know? So if you're
You have like 40 acres or something crazy.
Yeah, exactly. you're talking about an engagement distance for home defense of, you know, between like 10 and 30 feet, probably. You know, you don't want to be shooting at somebody who's 100 feet away, because that's not really a justified defensive situation. Because if they're 100 feet away, they're probably not a threat to you, because they're
right.
not, they're not, like, unless you have a giant house where you have hallways that are 100 feet long. But, you know, I'm talking about like a normal apartment or suburban home.
Right. Yeah. And most of us live in, if you're 100 yards away in a residential neighborhood, like, that's probably not your house.
So. Yeah. You can't be taking people out like that. So, you know, you have all these things that are objective considerations. You don't want over penetration. You want sufficient capacity, because the tiny gun holds 6 rounds, which is more than zero. But when you're in your home, you don't have to worry about, like, is this gun so heavy or so big I can't hide it in my pants or whatever? And so you don't have to make these kind of compromises on round count. Like, so Glock, I think the standard Glock factory magazines for their range between like 10 and 17.
Okay.
But they also make a 33 rounder right here, which I use. And so, like, it's made by them. It's not a third party thing. And my dogs are going crazy. It's a normal, they would call it like a standard capacity thing, because it works in all of their 9mm guns, you know?
Right, right.
And,
it's just like longer than the normal, like 18 rounds or whatever, 24 or whatever it is.
And so 33 rounds, I mean, this is over 5 times the capacity of this guy.
Right.
Or you would have to reload, which is a substantial advantage if you think about it. If you're in being subject to a home invasion, 6 bullets sounds like a lot, because you would not want to get shot by 6 bullets.
Right.
But when you factor in how many are actually going to hit, and are they going to hit in a place that's actually going to stop someone who's attacking you, there's all these things where, you know, I mean, in most defensive gun situations, the number of bullets fired that stops it is zero, because the presence of a gun often ends the situation. But when bullets are fired, there were statistics gathered from police that showed how many they fired. And on average, it was more than 6. And so you want to have, you think about it, you want to have as many as you can.
That just makes sense. If you want, if you're going to do it, then you might as well, you know, lean in and do it right. You know, especially if you factor in, you know, if it's 2 in the morning, I'm definitely not like alert, awake, and oriented at 2 in the morning. So I'm probably going to miss a couple times before I hit something.
And they say everybody falls back to like their worst part of their training or whatever. So you're not going to be at your best. And there's all kinds of, I mean, maybe you've never had to practice shooting, you know, while moving or standing or, you know, whatever, all these different kinds of things.
Yeah.
And so then once you take into all those considerations, you want something that doesn't over penetrate like crazy. You want something with decent capacity. You want something that is a manageable size for your environment. So what we call like close quarters combat. And this, you know, we're all talking defensive. So we're talking about, unfortunately, the situation of like maybe you're having to kill someone who's trying to kill you. And, you know, it's scary to think about. It is what you're talking about. So you also need something that's going to be sufficiently lethal against the target. And not necessarily, you're not like shooting to kill them, but you need your ammunition and your firearm to be powerful enough to stop them from hurting you. And, you know, a lot of times, unfortunately, that does lead to them dying, but because I guess it's a fine line between someone who is able to attack you and someone who's not.
Yeah.
And you want to do everything you can to assure that they cannot attack you. And so you see there's been court cases where people have like fired warning shots, or they've shot people in the legs to stop them, and they end up getting either charged or having to pay out all kinds of money to this person in damages, because they say, well, you know, if you really thought I was a threat, you would have tried to kill me instead of shooting me in the leg like an asshole, you know.
Which that's such a weird, like, I don't know, like, line to play it. Like, I broke into your house to steal your TV and I did not kill you, but like, now I'm going to sue you for shooting me in the leg, even though I was definitely someplace I wasn't supposed. It's just like a weird line.
Famous court case. I don't know how true it is, where the guy like fell in through the ceiling to rob someone and broke his leg, and he sued him because he broke his leg in their house. You know,
of course.
But so
yeah, somebody told me one time, like, shoot to kill because dead people don't talk. So if you're gonna shoot somebody, shoot to kill because dead people don't talk. And I was like, I mean, that's for sure a way to look at it. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's so in our community, it's. For people that are, you know, because I one of the reasons I have guns is for self-defense, because I, you know, like, I don't live in an ideal location where it's inconceivable that I could be attacked, or, you know, I don't want to go too much into it, but I'm glad that I have had guns in my house because of things that have happened in or to my house in the past.
Oh, absolutely.
And so,
well, so, also, let's be honest, you know, when the economy is tanking, like, crime goes up. So,
yeah, that's you know, true. And not every place is, you know, maybe people listen to this and they think it's completely inconceivable that someone would break into my house and try to kill me. That's not the case everywhere.
Right.
There's a lot. I mean, that does happen. It happens.
It happens in my parents' neighborhood. Like one of the neighborhoods that they live in North Texas is like they have the highest like break-in, like one of the highest break-in rates in their neighborhood or something, and it's like one of like the nicest neighborhoods. Like, I mean, it's not like super ritzy or anything. It's just like, you know, it's one of the nicer, you know, middle class neighborhoods, and it's like, but they have had more break-ins in like the last 6 months than like anybody else in their town, you know.
My first night, I moved into a new apartment that was not it was not my first choice of apartment complexes, but it's what I could afford coming out of college. And it was my first place. It was like completely on my own, living by myself and everything. And my girlfriend at the time helped me move in, and she saw that I put my gun in the nightstand, and I had like, you know, I'd like cocked it so it's ready to go. And she was like, is that really necessary? Like, can't we lock that up? And I'm like, hey, you never know. That night, I'm not making this up just to spread my argument. That night, my next door neighbor was robbed at gunpoint by someone armed with a gun. So, I mean, it was
welcome to the neighborhood.
It could have been me, and I'm glad it wasn't. But we, you know, we had made that prepared for that sort of situation, and she never brought it up again because it was like, apparently this is the kind of place we live now. So
yeah, and I mean, you know, when you, especially when you're just out of college, you can't necessarily like afford, you know, the greatest of apartments or places to live. So you kind of have to just work with what you've got.
Yeah. But so basically for your home defense question, the three main schools of thought, your handgun route, your shotgun route, and your rifle route. And I'll go kind of in that order. So, because handguns and shotguns are probably the most common that people would use. We're not talking about like, I'm talking more like urban, suburban, and not like super unpopulated areas, because just for like your hobbyist.
Yeah.
Basically, I'm not talking about you know, like 80, 90 year old people that have had a shotgun in their closet for, you know, 80 or 90 years.
Right.
And then like my grandpa is close to 90, and he has a, like a tiny, tiny little 22 revolver that is his home defense gun, because that's the gun he's had his entire life. And I, you know, it doesn't matter if I point out to him that that's a terrible choice, because for a lot of reasons, but I mean, you know, he's like half blind, he has Parkinson's, he's not strong enough to fire it anymore. But so this is the nightstand gun I use, the CZ75 9mm. It has 17 rounds of 9mm, and it has the light, and it also has a fancy schmancy threaded barrel that I can use to attach my silencer / suppressor, is the industry correct term, but silencer is the term everybody knows from movies and TV. And so,
but to be clear, it doesn't make it super, like, it doesn't make it silence. Like, if you shoot that gun, you're still gonna hear something. It's not
exactly. The idea behind these is an interesting one, because most people that haven't used one of these would tell you it's probably not something that your average Joe should have And in fact, they are highly regulated by the government. And I wouldn't say they're like impossibly difficult to get, but they're subject to much stricter regulations than their guns. So,
yeah, the way my husband described it was like, you have to fill out all these forms. I mean, it's almost like getting a passport. Like it's that, like it takes that long.
Yeah. My background check to get this took 9 months.
Oh my God. Well, I mean,
I had to pay a $200 tax on it as well, not including the sales tax for it. Just there's a tax you pay to the government to register it. But what it does is very cool. It reduces the decibel output of the sound from the, you know, explosion of the bullet. And what it does is it lowers that sound below the threshold that causes you to go deaf. And, you know, in guns, we talk about deafness because damage to your ears is cumulative. And so you could have one event that causes your deafness, or you could have 10 small events that cause your deafness, but over time they add up. And so people typically say, if you're firing a gun indoors, even sometimes one that is suppressed, depending on how effective that suppressor is, you should plan on having permanent hearing damage or total deafness. If you're thinking about firing like a 12-gauge shotgun indoors, right, in a contained environment, you will with certainty experience hearing loss from that, because you don't have time to put on the earmuffs and everything, and it's
right.
You're trying to hear what's going on.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
So this is a very, very useful tool for not only a defensive gun user who is trying to preserve their life, but also their hearing. But when you think about for sport shooting, it's something that is considered courteous to suppress the level of the sound. You know, if you're on lands that other people could hear it, or if you're at like a gun range and you have someone really close to you and it's, you know, really loud and disruptive, it's a useful thing and right, not strictly like a tool of assassins who are killing people silently. Right. It's not like that. You still hear this. It's just at a level that doesn't cause your deafness.
Okay. Well, that's good. I mean, we don't want everybody going deaf.
Yeah. But you know, with like, so we talked about the 22 caliber guns. The suppressors for those, if you're using a subsonic round, which means the round travels slower than the speed of sound, and this is true for all of them, but especially for those, a 22 that's sufficiently suppressed can be like whisper quiet, and you'll just hear like the clicking of the gun and then whatever the bullet hits. Whereas like if you are firing a subsonic round, you hear a sonic boom from that gun, the bullet breaking the sound barrier.
Right.
And so that's a huge difference in why the suppressor / silencer is such a valuable tool, because it, you know, they say like, oh, nobody should use silencers for hunting, but like emitting sonic booms all over the place doesn't really, you know, it's not really conducive to anything really, other than announcing your presence, you know, but it's also a safety thing. You're keeping yourself and everyone around you safe, and not, right, you know, not splitting the eardrums of all the woodland creatures and everything. I don't know how realistic that is, but just...
Well, I mean, I could only, I would imagine that if you're, you know, we're all living creatures. And so we all have a certain, you know, sound barrier that we can go deaf at.
I honestly just completely pulled that out of my ass. I have no idea if hunting has an adverse effect on the eardrums of wildlife, but hey, maybe it's something we should look into, and silencers should be mandatory. You know, I don't know.
I mean, but I feel like you have a good case. Like I said, I don't know anything about it, but I would just for me, it sounds like it would make sense logically that if it can hurt our eardrums, then it can also hurt, you know, the squirrels too.
So that's your first cool thought. Your handgun, you could use your 33 round Glock magazine, and if you are going that way, you could have a big gun that's relatively heavy if you were to carry it, but when it's in your home, the weight reduces the recoil. Because the lighter the gun, the lighter the gun, the more energy is transferred directly into you because less of it is absorbed by the gun. And so it's a lot harder to control. But a big, heavy gun, especially with a big, heavy silencer on it, the recoil is substantially reduced. And that is something that you want. I mean, definitely in a defensive situation.
Oh, yeah.
And so then we talked about shotgun. So yeah. This is my 12-gauge. It's a Mossberg 590. And this is actually a, it's kind of a military and police type of shotgun. So a normal hunting shotgun will have between like a 3 and 6 round capacity. And these have 8. It can take, well, you say 8 plus 1. So in the tube and then 1 in the chamber. So 9 total. And then I have the little, you know, the little caddy thing for it. So I have 5 more. And then I have a light on this one as well. And
cool.
The nice thing about this is so this one has a 18.5-inch barrel, which is 10 inches shorter than a traditional hunting barrel of 28 inches. So it's a lot more maneuverable. Mm-hmm. And, like in your home type of situation, it does stick out a lot further than the handgun does, but not so far that it's completely unusable. And
do you have more accuracy with it than you do with a handgun?
Yeah.
Okay.
You have a lot more accuracy because the longer the barrel is, that's more time that the bullet has, or not necessarily the bullet, but your load has to, if you think about when you're pointing it, if you're pointing at something with a 1-inch barrel, a 1 degree or difference and a 10 degree or 20 degree difference is only a few millimeters at the end of that, right?
Right.
But if you have a 30-inch barrel, or in this case, 20, if you're off by 5 or 10 degrees, that's a huge difference in your left, or your front hand and your back hand. And so the longer the barrel is, the more easy it is to be accurate. But it's also, it's a lot longer. So if you think about navigating a hallway or doorways and things like that, it's something you have to take into consideration to make sure that you're not going to be in a position where you can't turn around rapidly.
Right. Yeah.
And then there's also these things of how hard is it for someone to take it from you, with the handgun, you can, and I'm not a self-defense expert, so I'm just kind of hypothesizing all these things that could happen. But, you could move it to behind you or something. The shotgun, it's big and long, and someone can grab a hold of it. But, it does, you can have the sling and something where it's basically tied to you. And,
right.
But it's just something to take into consideration when you're doing, taking a gun or practicing, preparing, all that sort of thing. These are just, off the top of my head, I'm not reciting a training course or anything here. But the nice thing about shotguns is there's millions of different shotgun loads. And so, a shotgun shell is you think about the old blunderbusses where it's just a gun that's a tube that you cram a bunch of stuff into and fire it. And so shotgun shell is similar, but there's all kinds of different projectiles that can go into it. It's not always in video games, the shotgun is if you're 3 feet away from someone, it kills them immediately. But if you're 10 feet away, it doesn't even hit them. It's not quite like that. But there's varying degrees of bullet spread or the projectile spread of how far out the pellets go. And then the weight of them also determines you use a different size pellet to shoot birds versus to shoot bears,
I would think.
Yeah. So you think about that guy that Dick Cheney shot in the face when they were quail hunting. Well, quail are teeny tiny little birds that you need teeny tiny little bullets to kill. And so the type of round, if you shoot a person with it, it's barely going to go in through their skin because you have a lot of small projectiles that have the same amount of energy in them as one giant projectile, but it's spread out across hundreds of them. So a lot of the injuries will be, literally skin deep. And so so even with this kind of gun, you have to think about that if you're going to use it. With handguns, it's a lot simpler. You're either using hollow point bullets like we talked about before, or you're not. And that's the big main consideration. With these, you have all the different, there's there's different loads for every kind of bird, every kind of deer, and so on. And then there's also just, I mean, you can get what's called a slug, where it's a giant 1 ounce like block of lead that it shoots as one projectile. And that's designed for taking deer at distances, like hunting range of like over 100 yards, you know, 50, 100 yards. And I'm, full disclosure, like, I'm not really a hunter. I'm not big on killing either, like you talked about before. So I don't know all the exact things about this, but
yeah,
to get a sense of the scale, if you were to shoot the bird shot that has like 200 tiny little BBs in it 100 yards away, probably none of them are going to hit what you're aiming at, because the spread will be so much.
Right. Yeah. I know that about, like, isn't that the buckshot that just, like, it's just a bunch of little BBs and it just goes.
Yeah, buckshot is like a common, it's kind of a compromise between the having numerous projectiles to hopefully increase your chances of hitting something versus having such a crazy huge projectile that it goes through your wall and then five of your neighbor's walls. And so with the buckshot, we get, you know, typically between 9 and 12 or 15 pellets that are about handgun bullet size. Usually they're, you know, around 30-ish caliber. And then you have enough of them that, you know, a double-aught or triple-aught buck, or like a number 4, number 1 buck, these are the common self-defense rounds that are also used for deer. They will make, you know, I mean, from like 10 or 20 yards away, some like a pattern of a spread of bullets. It'll be about the size of your fist, which is about, you know, 20 or 30 times bigger than a single handgun bullet. And so it has the potential to make you much more accurate, because right, at least one of those things is more likely to hit your target. But the downside of that is you have to think about all the ones that are going to miss, and what are they going to hit? What fundamental gun safety rules is knowing your target and what lies beyond it, because you're responsible for every single bullet that you fire or every projectile. So the nice thing about these smaller pellets versus the giant slugs is they are not as likely to overpenetrate, which is one of the concerns we talked about earlier. They, you know, each one of them has enough energy to do substantial harm to something that it shoots, and also little enough that it's not going to go through tons and tons of walls. It'll go through some, probably. There's a lot of ballistic tests you can see of how many walls certain rounds will penetrate through. But it makes it more likely that they're not going to leave your home as
yeah,
if you were used to, we talked about like the 50 caliber rifle or the shotgun slug or just something with a ton of energy and mass behind it that can just, you know.
Yeah. And then it's like, yeah, your whole apartment complex is just blown to pieces. Well, not blown to pieces, but like the wall is gone.
You know, God forbid your home gets broken into. You successfully defend yourself against an intruder, but you find out that you've inadvertently injured someone in another room or another building or something. That's the main concern with overpenetration, is that kind of, you know, you don't want that collateral damage when you're, because you're already up against a steep uphill climb of defending yourself in court for a legal gun use.
Right.
And then if you accidentally killed someone innocent, in addition to that, you're in very deep crap. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that's shotguns. You got all kinds of, you know, all kinds of customization stuff there with the rounds and everything. And that's a debate that will never be settled as for what you should use. There's people that say that you should load your first shell as birdshot, as like a warning, you know, to like you hit them.
Yeah, I've heard that where it's like, I've heard first you do like rock salt or whatever, and then you do like bird, and then you do a slug, and then you do like, then you alternate. And it's just like, I don't know.
But we get back to that argument before about warning shots, where if you use rock salt on someone, that's the same as just pointing a gun at them and doing nothing, which is itself a crime if it's not justified. You know, that is considered assault with a deadly weapon, even before you pull the trigger. And so
I did not know that.
And so what a lot of people say in the, you know, kind of defensive hobbyist area is, if you're going to point a gun at someone, you have already reached the level of situation where it's time to use it, because every other possibility has been exhausted.
Right.
And if rock salt is factoring in, then you clearly you're not in a true situation where you fear for your life, because in those situations, the lethal force is justified, you know?
Right.
It's an unfortunate step to take. Nobody wants to kill someone, with barring some very strange exception. But if you're going to be bringing a gun to that sort of situation, you have to be prepared to use it. And if you're not prepared to use it, you know, either don't bring it or don't load it with a gimmicky round that is not, you know, if shooting someone with rock salt or with the bird shot, the theory is it will deter them. The reality is that doesn't happen.
Right.
You know, once the gun is introduced, then there's all sorts of other things that are going to happen. But typically, just having it produced there, like I said before, that's the most common outcome, is that they just leave, you know. In all, statistically speaking, according to the FBI crime statistics, typically once the gun is introduced, the conflict ends. But anyway, I'm personally very against these kind of half measures, because it goes against the spirit of the law. It goes against the spirit of like why we have weapons for self-defense, and it's doing yourself a disservice when you go to have to defend yourself in the legal battle I talked about. Anyway, so.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, no, go ahead. I know I'm talking your ear off, but.
No, you're fine.
Get through your question finally. Okay, so what is the ultimate home defense gun? It's one that is compact enough for maneuverability, one that is difficult to be taken away from you, one that allows you to identify your target with lights and everything, one that has sufficient round capacity so that your ammunition is not prematurely exhausted, and one that will not over-penetrate and cause substantial collateral damage. And the weapon you're probably not thinking of right now is the AR-15. And yet, it ticks every single one of those boxes. And that is why everyone that I know who is like extremely well versed on this stuff, at least many of them, not everyone, recommends it, because it is so versatile and has so many. It's so configurable. We say it's like Legos or say it's like Barbies for adult men, because that's, you know, I mean, stereotypically, traditionally, that's who's buying these, and it's not who they're for, but that's you know who,
right.
who does collect them. And so
that's what my husband said. He said that because like you get, there's just so much, it is like Legos, like it's you just build your own, choose your own adventure kind of thing, where you just like, there's so many parts that you can add on, take off, put this here, do all, you know. So
like for this gun, I have two different.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com, and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
What's called uppers that can take, basically barrels that can take, so I can swap out the different caliber in like 5 seconds. So right now I have it on one that it's a 9mm, and so it's the same size as that silencer that I can use for the pistol. It takes the standard, like the, you know, quote unquote standard capacity magazines for it. They make 10, 20, 30, and 40 rounds for it, which is pretty great to have. And the 33 round Glock magazine, this gun is actually adapted to take that.
Oh, okay. And that's nice.
Since it's 9mm, every bullet requires like a minimum barrel length for it to be effective or like achieve its ideal ballistics. And so with the 9mm, this barrel is only, I think, 8 inches long, which for a pistol is extremely long compared to most of your longest handguns are only 5 inches, or the tiny one is only a 3-inch barrel.
Right.
We have three times that, which means our accuracy is increased. but it's not so crazy long that it's going to be bumping into things like maybe the shotgun would. Now, this is actually another what's called an NFA item. It's registered under the National Firearms Act the same way that the silencer is. And so I had to do a like very long background check, pay the $200 and everything to build this gun because it's called a short-barreled rifle. The barrel is under 16 inches. And so it's like the same classification or similar classification as a sawed-off shotgun, where if you cut off the barrel below 16 inches, it's breaking the law unless you're approved to manufacture it. So, but
a reason that like you have to have, I mean, I don't think it's like necessarily bad, but I just don't know, like, is there a reason that they have it like so complicated, I guess, where you have to like do all this stuff? Is there, what is their reasoning behind it? Like, if you can have that, but you can just like, you know, go to the pawn shop and sign two pieces of paper, like what's the, you know, I don't understand what that.
I mean, a lot of it is political. The National Firearms Act was passed in the, I think as a part of the Gun Control Act of 1968, I want to say. I'm not a legal scholar or historian here. And then there was a Gun Control Act, I think, of 1986. That was when machine guns were regulated. And so, but a lot of it has to do with like, you know, this could fit in a briefcase. And so like, it's something that I think is concerned around preventing crime, but at the same time, you could fit 10 handguns in a briefcase. So really, like, what's the difference, you know?
Yeah.
And this shoots the exact same bullet that my pistol shoots. You know, I use the same ones between them, and that's why I built this, is so that I could change between them and shoot a lot cheaper, because the rifle rounds are expensive as hell, especially during coronavirus election year. And, but so the round that this I actually built this for, which is this one, it has it's like a specially manufactured round for, it was designed with like self-defense and some hunting in mind. But the round itself is inherently subsonic, which we talked about before, means that when you put it through a silencer, it gets even quieter. And it's basically an AK-47 bullet and an AR-15 bullet jacket. And so it's kind of the best of both worlds there. It's like the perfect self-defense round. It's subsonic, so it's not going to blow out your eardrums. And when you put it through a silencer, it is like, it's super, super quiet. It's really, really cool. And it fits in the standard AR-15 magazines. So you can get, you know, you can get 30 of them in there. And it's just great. It's amazing. It's it's such a great home defense round because it's big and heavy and slow, which means that it gets stopped by, if you compare it to the normal AR-15 round is a 223 Remington or 5.56 millimeter. They're a rifle round. They're designed to shoot, you know, 500-600 meters, which means they're like very quick and they will go through tons and tons of drywall. But these bullets are designed for much shorter engagements and they're a lot slower. And so they don't. So it's great. But anyway, that's my pick for home defense. This thing is awesome. And I realize it seems like, I mean, it's like the most stigmatized gun in our country. I get that. I get that they're scary for people that haven't used them. They're using all these, you know, all these crimes on TV and everything. But if you want to defend your home, they are just such a kick-ass option.
Okay, so bullets. We talked a little bit about them. What's the deal? Like, do you have a specific company that you like, or do you make your own bullets? I've seen people like on YouTube make their own bullets.
I actually have a YouTube video of me doing that from like years ago, from 2012, the long past. But yeah, it's great. So I mean, I don't have any kind of like bullet loyalty because ever since 2012, and this goes back. I mean, in the past it was similar, but just that's how I've been shooting since like 2011 as like an adult. So I know the prices of things because now I actually pay for them.
Yeah. So turns out it's different when you're an adult.
Yeah. Anytime we have an election year or anytime there's been like a tragedy that involves guns, those things have a huge substantial impact on the firearms market because everybody starts panic buying things up because they're afraid they're going to be banned by the government. And so, or that, in the case of coronavirus, that there's going to be like an apocalypse where people are going to have to be defending against looters and stuff. And so I've typically just shot what is affordable and what is compatible with the gun. And, you know, when I was manufacturing ammo for myself, it was for cost savings. You know, that's really all it was. I could make ammo for half the price that I could buy it.
And oh, so wow.
On paper, it makes sense. In reality, making 1,000 rounds of 9mm a month sucks. It's really boring. If you like tedious things like knitting and stuff, then you probably love it. But man, you have to be paying attention the whole time, because if you put twice as much gunpowder in one by mistake, there's potential that could blow up and blow up right. in your gun and either injure or kill you, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
Or if you're using that ammunition for self-defense, what if you forget to put the gunpowder in one? You know, that could lead to you. That could lead
it's
to
too
your
many
death.
Problems. So, it's just too yeah. many problems. It's like reasons why I would not want to do that. I would know that I would.
Yeah.
No. So they, I've seen people do it on YouTube and they look really pretty, yeah. but it's just like, wow, I couldn't.
It makes sense for a lot of things. It makes sense if you're practicing shooting a lot, or if you're doing shooting sports where your accuracy really, really matters. For long distance rifle shooting, a lot of people manufacture their ammo because they can tweak it specifically to their gun and the conditions and everything.
That so. Makes sense.
Lets you know, factory ammo necessarily has there's quality control that goes into it, and so there's an acceptable level of quality control that those companies have decided on. But if you're making the ammunition, you set the quality standard. You can get that powder weight to exactly what you want it to be, whereas their machine is just going to say, you know, it's good enough.
Right. What's up with like the grains? What's the deal? Like, I don't like 9 grain. I don't know what does any of that mean?
Yeah. So grains is a measuring unit the same way as, you know, like grams and ounces and stuff. It used to refer to grains of black powder, I believe is the, of that went into a you know, like an old cartridge for a gun. Now we use what's called smokeless powder, which is different from black powder. And people still use black powder for shooting like replicas of like Civil War guns and stuff like that. But for ours, they all use it's a powder that has like a lot less residue and it's more reliable and it's easier to ignite, things like that. So that, you know, there a lot of those old guns, like you would shoot it or you'd try to shoot it and the powder wouldn't light or whatever else. And so grains, although it doesn't mean, you know, so a grain of gunpowder in a modern bullet will not weigh 1 grain anymore. It will
right.
weigh like some amount of grains, but the measurement has stayed throughout, you know, just like a relic of like feet, you know, feet was yeah. like king's feet or whatever. I hear, I don't know if that's
yeah.
true.
So now, okay.
Yeah. It has nothing to do with feet anymore, but we
yeah.
still call it.
Okay. So one last question and then I'll let you go. I'm sorry, I've kept you so long.
No, not at all. Not a problem.
Okay. Okay, so like you just said, like Civil War gun, like if I was going to be a collector, I am a big history like nerd. I love history. I'm a huge nerd regardless, but I love history, so I would definitely be like one of those like crazy people that like you know has like a Revolutionary War gun. I would like, you know, maybe shoot it like twice and then be like, don't touch it. Like, it's just for
yeah,
the history
yeah.
of it. Like, it's just really pretty. Just don't touch it. I've shot it twice. What would be like if you could have any gun in the world, like what would be like your dream gun? Like that would,
oh,
that you would have, like just to, for fun to have, like, or even just to like shoot, like even just to shoot just like once in your life, just to say, you've done,
yeah.
like, what would it be?
Yeah, you know, my brothers are in the army, and
well, thank
they,
you.
They
I appreciate
they
that.
Show
thank
me.
You.
Oh, what?
For your brother, they just tell
oh.
me thank you. Thank you for that.
I'll think about it. It tends to go to their head, so,
oh.
so they're super humble. They hate being thanked, or like if we go out and they're in uniform or something, it when they have to be. They don't do it when they don't have to. They hate all the fanfare and people buying them drinks and desserts and stuff. I don't know. They're like, I think they're exceptionally good soldiers because they're very humble. But anyway, So they show me all the stuff they get to shoot. One of my brothers is a helicopter pilot, and their helicopter has a machine gun and a rocket launcher. And that's just that's just cool as shit, I think. But
I made like a potato gun one time, like when I was a kid, but which is sort of like a rocket launcher, but like it's the child's version of it, you know, like it's not really. But wow, that would be nuts.
So they have a belt fed machine gun on that sticks out the helicopter, and it's similar. There's a lot of them that are used in the military, and they're kind of like an older design, but they've stuck around. And so they're 50 caliber. And then I think like every third or fourth round in there is a tracer. And so that's where it has a phosphorus tip on it that burns as it goes through the air. And so you see it go almost like a laser from Star Wars or something. So you can see what you're shooting at. I've shot them before from one of mine. You can't buy new ones, but you can get military surplus ones that have supposedly expired. But like a lot of them.
Do they really though?
They like, do. Well, yeah, because the phosphorus decays, but a lot of them will still go off if they've been, you know, preserved somehow or whatever. So you're not supposed to shoot them indoors. There's been a lot of fires. There's one in Texas, actually, a really big fire in a gun range because somebody was shooting tracers, and the backstops of gun ranges oftentimes are shredded tires. So it caused this huge fire.
I haven't heard about that. I'll have to look that up. That's nuts.
Yeah, something like that. Is super cool. Or you've seen like the mini guns that have like all the rotating barrels and everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, I don't know what circumstances where civilians can shoot these things, but I hope to find one because that would just be cool. There's a lot of them that you can own. Like you can own the mini guns and stuff. It's just, you can own machine guns if they've been manufactured before 1986. Cause that was when, that's what the law said. It kind of like, it grandfathered them. You can't own any machine gun made after that unless you are like a gun dealer of a certain type. But the problem is, so you have to go through that NFA process where you have like the 9-month background check. Potentially, it could be longer, could be shorter. You have to go through the really like scrutinized that, you know, they look through all your stuff, and you have to pay the $200 stamp. And then since there's no more guns being made since 1986 is over. There's a limited number of them, right? Many of them are lost or destroyed or stolen, and lots of them are in the hands of collectors. And so the prices are crazy, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So like, you want to get the fully automatic version of this guy. Back in when I was looking into it, they started at like $20,000. Whereas this gun was like, you know, like $600. And the only difference is that one fires lots of bullets at once. Whereas this one is one bullet. Trigger pull. So
yeah, I don't have like just $20,000 just like lying around.
No. The cheapest machine guns in, you know, so 2011 was like a really economically like viable year for people that were collecting guns because it was before the it was better than like 2012 because 2012 obviously you had President Obama was reelected, and then there was the horrible shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School, and the two of those happened, I think, within a month of each other, or approximately. And so it was like the firearms market was crazy. It was completely crazy. And I know it seems callous to talk about that in the wake of it, but I have a lot of friends in the industry, and so their businesses were in very, very strange times. And
was it just like was it just going through the roof? Like, where's everybody just like, did they just not have anything left on the shelves kind of a thing? Like more toilet paper kind of situation.
Exactly. Imagine the problem with the toilet paper was once all the inventory is bought up, the manufacturers have to keep up because they manufacture how much they can sell in a normal time. And so they couldn't keep up with our demand even after all the inventory was gone. And it was the same with guns. The guns, you know, they don't make the same quantity of guns as they do toilet paper. So imagine like, you know, maybe a third or a fourth of the people that are buying toilet paper is pretty generous. But so say 10% of the people that are buying toilet paper like crazy, if they're buying guns like crazy, and there's way, way, way fewer guns. That's still tens of millions of people. So anyway, so if you had a gun, you could sell it for anything you wanted. I had a few things that I didn't want anymore, really. And I was trying to buy my first house in 2011 or 2012, sorry. And so I sold some of my guns for 3 times what I paid for them.
Oh, wow. Well, like, good for you.
Yeah. Now, I should say it's illegal to buy a gun with the intent of reselling it, and that's not what I did. I bought these, and then, like, months later, we had all this crazy crap going on, and suddenly I was able to put together a down payment on my house, buy extra stuff that I had. That was great.
Oh, yeah. No. I don't think that you... let's just make that very clear. That's not what happened. I wouldn't do that either. I don't know anybody who has that intent. I'm sure there are people out there, but
yeah, no, it's a thing, you know, people with anything that you can buy and sell, people will buy it low and sell it high. And so this is just one of those areas where, you know, it's legal to buy and sell as many guns as you want to a limit, to a point. I think recently there was some kind of scrutiny that's being put on that. But, you know, as a private citizen, you can buy and sell guns as much as you want. And so there's nothing stopping people from doing it as a business, or there wasn't at the time during this panic. So people did it. Absolutely, they did it. But,
oh, I'm sure. But yeah, no, that's not what happens. My husband did not buy that gun, you know, and then is like, well, then we should, you know, I'm going to buy this and then we're going to, no, he was like, no, I bought this and I want to go shoot it. Like, that's what.
But, so I guess for you, as someone, you know, as we look back on our whole thing here, even with all of these things that I've talked about, your personal experience with guns is what it is. You know, you don't have my experience, you have yours. And yours has had some unfortunate moments where it was frightening for you. And so, I'm not just speaking for you, but for anyone who's had that kind of experience. There are some people that it'll put them off of it forever. And I think that's unfortunate because, you know, it's not a hobby that everyone should absolutely participate in. But if it's something that you are interested in or were interested in, but there's just this one part of it that bugs you because it was scary or you're uncomfortable, there's a lot that you can do to really, you know, make yourself feel better about it. And so, like, if you have the opportunity to go shoot with your husband, or your listeners have an opportunity to go shoot with someone who, like a friend or, you know, colleague or someone or family member who wants to go, but you're scared, you don't have to go and shoot the most powerful thing there you feel like it's going to come back and hit you in the face. And anybody that tries to get you to do that is not doing so out of a position of concern for your enjoyment. They're doing it maybe to get a laugh. Like, there's a million YouTube videos of men handing their wives a big ass gun and then laughing when it knocks them on their butt. But people who care about you and who care about you enjoying this activity are not going to do that. And right. So my recommendation for you personally is if you go to a range that allows you to rent guns, or if you know someone that has access to them, find the biggest, heaviest revolver that they have. Okay.
Okay.
And specifically, most gun ranges have a giant, like, 6-inch barrel or 5-inch barrel, 22 caliber revolver. It'll be the exact same size as their giant, like, 44 Magnum revolver. So it's big and heavy, but it shoots that tiny bullet. And that tiny bullet cannot put enough energy into that big, heavy gun to knock you on your butt. It will, I mean, I'm talking seriously, a 22 caliber through a, like, 5-pound revolver or whatever, however much they weigh, is almost no perceived recoil. And that gives you the ability to gain a lot of confidence as someone who's shooting, so that you can see, all right, I have control over this tool. It doesn't have control over me. And it gives you a good stepping stone, because from there you could go to, like, a 38 special revolver, which is, it's kind of like a dumbed down 357 Magnum, which is a very powerful round, but the 38 special is like, it's like a neutered version of it almost. And so out of that same huge, it's a solid steel gun. It has all this mass, and, you know, the law of the conservation of energy says that mass matters in this reaction, of as far as how much gets transferred into you from that explosion. And so if you try that 22 caliber revolver and then a 22 caliber or a 38 special revolver, the big heavy guns, I think you'll have a lot better experience than you did with whatever you were shooting, because they, you know, they are guns. Like, they have an explosion And in a combustion process, it shoots a lead projectile, but they're very manageable. Or if you get a chance to shoot a .22 rifle, that's a huge, I mean, a gun the size of my pellet gun that's shooting a .22, that a .22 is like the same amount of powder charge that's in a nail gun. You know what I mean?
So okay.
That is an opportunity to become comfortable, to build some like muscle memory with the act of it, to get, the more you do it, the more comfortable you'll be around it. And not so that you'll be complacent, but so that you won't be panicking and maybe injuring yourself inadvertently by being so really cautious that you're not putting yourself in a position where you can shoot safely at all. So there's, you know, there's like a natural progression that you and anyone else could take. And so I've taken probably a dozen, you know, maybe as many as 20 people on their first trip shooting, including, well, I mean, or, you know, first or second trip shooting. And so they've said like, oh yeah, you know, like somebody had me shoot a shotgun. That was my first time. And so I've been put off by it. You're not the only one that's happened to. It happened to me as well. It's happened to like my girlfriend had the first time she went shooting was like a shotgun and an AK-47. And I'm like, those are terrible first choices because they're loud. They have recoil. They're scary. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
You got to set someone up for success and build that confidence by giving them something easy that it's still a real gun. You know, it's not like not shooting like airsoft or something, but it lets you get used to, okay, there's a big bang that happened, but I didn't die from the recoil. And so I know if I do it again, eventually those bangs don't freak you out as much. It used to be in the gun range, every time I hear a bang, I'm like, oh, you know, like I'm getting like shell shock from it. But, you know, when I'm in a gun range now, the sound's going off. It doesn't even faze me. You know, it's just like you get used to it. So you can focus on what you're doing. So that'd be my advice to you is like, don't give up on it because you had a bad experience. Just use it as an opportunity to seek out what you could do to improve that experience. And anybody who cares about you will care about you enjoying yourself while you're doing an activity with them that they care about. You know, it's about
absolutely
like, finding a way that you can do it together where you both enjoy it. So don't ever shoot something you're not comfortable with. You know, you know what's right for you. Nobody else knows what's right for you. But you can, you know, do the research and see what is recommended by experts and people with experience.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I definitely want to. There's a couple. We just moved to this area, so there's a couple around here, like shooting ranges that we want to go to. But I want to try to find something a little bit more comfortable in my hand before I do that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for talking to me about it. I'm definitely probably going to have to reach out and have you back on, especially to talk about the shaving thing. That's super interesting.
Oh, yeah.
That's so fun.
I mean, that's awesome. If not me, I could put you in touch with, running the business, and I have a lot of friends that also have businesses and stuff. And so we have, I mean, literally thousands of customers just in our small circle who are enthusiasts about this. And I mean, you wouldn't believe how dedicated people are to this. I mean, you're imagining someone who's dedicated to it. You're falling far, far short of the people who are truly dedicated to this as a hobby.
That's so awesome. I never would have thought of like shaving as a hobby, but that's so fun. That's interesting.
I mean, have you ever found yourself wishing that your hair grew faster so that you could shave twice in one day? Probably not, because for you, it's probably like a routine that you associate with negativity because it's like, damn it, I have to do this thing again. You know?
Yeah,
what I mean?
I don't want to shave my legs again. No.
Yeah. And that's how it is for most people. But I mean, genuinely, and this described me as well. It was like, I was disappointed that I could only shave every 3 days because my hair grew so slowly that I couldn't use all the cool stuff that I had collected.
Oh, wow. Well, you might need to talk to my husband because he gets upset about that too, that he has to.
Oh, really?
This is like once a week. He's like so mad. He's like, it's the one. I have to do it once a week. And other people do it like every day.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'll definitely have to either get
awesome
with you or have you on here. Do you have anything that you want to plug? What are you doing like now? What are you doing in the future? Anything?
Yeah,
that you
totally.
Wanna...
I mean, it's funny because I really don't think about gun stuff is like a huge part of my life during the pandemic time, because it's like, it's so hard to get out and do it. And for a while, you know, the ranges were closed and everything because of the lockdown. So, my main hobby now is woodworking as a part of my business. So I do it for fun, but I do it also as a part of our shaving stuff. And I've kind of branched out into other things. Right now, I've been really big on making like butcher block cutting boards. So like 2-inch thick end grain of like hardwoods that are just like giant, massive things that can like take a lot of punishment and last a lifetime. I've done a lot of like bowls and stuff, and that's what I'm really big on. So the other component of that I work on with my girlfriend is we have a soap business. And so that started off as stuff for shaving soap. And then we moved on into like, now we have aftershaves, we have perfumes and colognes, and we sell bar soap that you can use in the shower or bath, or just for your hands at the sink or whatever else. But they make awesome gifts, and we design and create all of the scents in house. So they're all,
oh, wow.
Yeah, they're created with like traditional perfumery techniques, and it's all based around our theme. So our soap company is called Southern Witchcraft, because we're based south, and everything that we do is kind of like spooky themed. And so, like, for example, we made a soap scent and perfume and everything accompanying that was based on like Hannibal Lecter's character from Silence of the Lambs and Red Dragon and the Hannibal movie and everything. So it was like, that's we took elements out of each of those source materials to craft something that was like an homage to that character. Or the Italian horror movie Suspiria, we have one that's called Tres Madres, which is Three Mothers, which is the Three Mothers of the Italian. So it has like all these elements, like rain is a really big motif in those films. So it has like a rain scent and like a damp earth. And then it has like red wine and all the different flowers that are present in the film and everything. Or we have a druid inspired scent that's called Durantia. That's like about the pagan Yule time ritual. That's our Christmas scent, because we can't make a Christmas scent because our company is like about witches. And although we're not witches, everything that we do is like a tribute to our Celtic roots. And so that one is like, you know, it's like a lot of like pine and all these like outdoor foresty kind of elements. So that's kind of how all of our stuff is. We have a tribute to Bram Stoker's Dracula that's based on the Carpathia region in Europe. And so that's kind of like how we make things. So we have like a H.P. Lovecraft and Cthulhu themed soap that we put out in the summertime. That's like seawater and like kelp and like incense from like, you know, evil rituals and stuff. So that's one of our big passions. So Southern Witchcrafts, we're on southernwitchcrafts.com is our website. If you want to check out soap and perfume and stuff, we have like sample packs if you want to smell things, because admittedly our stuff is very weird and it's hard to tell what something smells like just by reading about it. And then if you're interested in like cutting boards or shaving tools, my website and Instagram is Dogwood Handcrafts, named for the dogwood trees of our area. And that's what we do. I don't make anything super gun specific right now. I have done a lot of shaving brushes with bullets in them, or with like specialty like rifle cartridges or stuff in them. Or if you've ever seen the bullet flowers that people make out of expanded hollow points, I'll mm-hmm. put those in a clear shave brush so you can see like the exploded bullet.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun. And, you know, I'll do other stuff like shark teeth or, you know, dice, or I have a bunch of meteorites that I put in and things like that.
That's so awesome. Okay, well, thank you so much, Stephen. I had a blast. I will have to get you back on or some of your friends to talk about the shaving and all the other cool stuff. I will definitely be checking out your website because I love things wicked. So, yeah. if you want to, okay. So, thanks, everybody. Be kind and stay weird, weirdos. Thank you.